The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined today by J.J. Zacharyson, the late-round quarterback. We are going to talk about his prospect guide, which you can purchase right now, lateround.com. I encourage everyone to get after it. And 2023 picks, like this time last offseason, it was bro, wait. You can't even believe, wait for the 2023 class. And which is funny because the 2022 class, bunch of studs, like a whole first round full of studs pretty much. And it's not really looking like this class is going to have the same treasure.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. And I don't say this in hindsight, you know, because I know it's easy to in an environment like this where, you know, 2023's really just like got worse. But my prospect model itself, like really, really liked last year's wide receiver class, like to a pretty decent degree, like saw it on par with the couple that came right before it where we had a lot of hits and had a lot of big players come out. And it's just funny because, you know, I know that we had, it seems like we just had such high hopes for a lot of these 2023 rookie wide receivers, and they just sort of fell flat on their face this past year. Even like, you know, JSN, who I love and who's a great prospect, but like even him,
he had five catches,
right? Like he could have really vaulted himself into being like this absolute stud. And now there's a lot of question marks from people. You know, and then obviously like Jordan Addison goes from Pitt and having this Biletnikoff season to not having that kind of season at USC. Kayshon Boutte wasn't able to build off of
anything.
Yeah. Like there's just so many guys who people had such high hopes for and they just completely crashed. I mean, they just didn't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, probably I would say the big gainers from this class. I mean, obviously Anthony Richardson being like playing at all, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, this is a dude who's in like a timeshare at quarterback with Emory Jones, who's like a future USFL quarterback.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. Zay Flowers, definitely a riser. Zach Charbonnet, the transfer from Michigan to UCLA, did him a lot of good. With the 2024 class, though, let me tell you about the 2024.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it's transitioning to.
Yeah, Jalen Hyatt's another one who seems to be climbing a lot after, you know, just not doing much at all production wise his first couple of seasons in at Tennessee.
Well, so he's sort of let's just start there. Let's just start with Jalen Hyatt. He's sort of interesting because he was a late breakout. Right. And COVID also makes some of this stuff sort of weird because more guys who maybe would have been early declares stayed an extra year. Now, Hyatt is an early declare. He came in 2020, only had 20 receptions his first year, 21 receptions his second year, 15 touchdowns on 67 receptions and 1300 yards last year. But I to me, it's, and you and I differ on the combine stuff a little bit. I still care about it a lot. But obviously, like, so much of that ends up being double counted because NFL teams care about it a lot and it feeds into draft capital, which is more predictive. But kind of a hard sell to be a speed-only guy and then run a 4.4. Or maybe not. Maybe it'll end up being fine. I wanted to see him a little bit quicker than that, a little bit better at the drills, but he's still probably going to be a first-round pick, honestly, just because the wide receiver thirst is so intense.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't fully disagree. I mean, the reason I don't really care about the athleticism stuff is just because I think it's captured in a lot of other metrics that are just better, draft capital being one of them. So it doesn't really get any signal within the stuff that I work with. It's obviously, you know, the thing that I say in my guide that I think is important. It's like if you have two identical prospects and one is an 85th percentile athlete and one's a 15th percentile athlete, then yes, you should want the 85th percentile athlete. Even, you know, even if there's like a slight difference between the two, you'd probably still want to go for that 85th percentile athlete. And you know, there's going to be instances too, where, you know, if a player is that bad of an athlete, which let's be honest, I mean, Jalen Hyatt didn't like, I mean, it's still not like a horrific time. It wasn't like David Bell last year where it could have gone in really two very, very different directions. You know, he had such a poor combine and he had decent enough draft capital, but that was clearly reflected in that combine. But I still, you know, from like a pure profile standpoint, a guy like Bell could have gone and been, you know, a Davante Adams like mold in that direction, or he could have just flopped. He ended up flopping. But to me, Jalin Hyatt looks a lot analytically, looks a lot like a worse version of Jameson Williams, where first couple of seasons in college did absolutely nothing. I know there's a little bit more reason for Jameson, which is another reason why this is like a diet Jameson Williams situation. So there's more reason for, you know, Jameson Williams not performing because he was behind studs and he was still playing at a really good program. But then that last season, that third season before the declare, they really blew up and, you know, he's a vertical threat guy who can stretch the field. You know, he's someone who has a good production profile overall, Hyatt, in my model, because I only take best season numbers and he had a great season last season. But when you match that with breakout age, guys within the top two rounds of the NFL draft from a draft capital standpoint generally see with a breakout age where he's at or worse, or even a little bit better than him, they basically, their upside gets cut in half, essentially. That's the easiest way to think of it. So, like, the breakout age piece is important for Hyatt, I think, with this discussion, with when you look at his profile analytically. I don't know if his ceiling, because like his comps in my model right now, Jameson Williams, Calvin Ridley, but his top one is Nelson Agholor, which I think is a reasonable way to think about Jalin Hyatt, is that, you know, he's not quite a Calvin Ridley, he's not quite a Jameson Williams. You know, maybe he could be Nelson Agholor. That could be the direction that we go in. And look, when Nelson Agholor came out, people were excited about Nelson Agholor. I mean, it's
Nelson Aguilar's been year 9 of being like a starting NFL wide receiver, which is like, you know, it's not like a John Baldwin type where like he never gets on the field. Cause he does like, you know, the Bill James thing. Once you demonstrate a skill, you own that forever, which is like Jalin Hyatt is going to be able to burn defensive backs down the field. Right. It's just a matter of if he can add the other stuff. I'm the guy I'm actually most bearish on relative to where people still have him, even after the combine, is Addison. And I think he will get the draft capital because he is a great route runner. He's real smooth and was super, I mean, he was super productive at Pitt, super productive at USC. But 173 pounds is really small. That's really small. And he ran a 4.49. Now he did the contradicting thing is he did super well in the agility drills, the short shuttle and the three cone, which we do really, I mean, we really, those are super important and have predictive value and NFL teams care about them, but that's small, right? And it's like, yeah, Devonta Smith did it, but not everyone is Devonta Smith.
Yeah, I mean, not only that. So Devonta Smith, I made the mistake of referencing on like a podcast a couple weeks ago because I was looking at player profiler because I couldn't remember Devonta Smith's like what he did. It, like, wasn't because I don't care about I don't care. I have the metrics somewhere in a database, but I don't have it in my prospect model. So I just decided, I was like, I'm not going to dig this up. I'm just going to look at player profiler. And they had Devonta Smith's 40 time, but Devonta Smith didn't run the 40. I think it was from taken from some other he didn't
pro
even
day.
But I don't even think he did it at his pro day either. So regardless,
you're right. I remember actually being worried about this, being like, it's a bad sign that this 170 pound dude doesn't want to run.
Right. But the I don't know what the reference point that they're using is for that. It might even be like something adjusted from high school or something like that. I have no idea. But I do think that when you watch these guys play, a guy like Devonta Smith, someone like you know, one of Addison's comps for me is T.Y. Hilton. Jahan Dotson is another comp for me. But a lot of these guys are arguably faster than Addison. I do think that there's some concern there. Like that was definitely a red flag. I mean, he still looks fine in my model because of the fact that the draft capital should still be there. If the combine does push back that draft capital, he's just naturally going to look a little bit worse. Right now, he's above the 90.
He might go to a really good team, though. That's sort of the double-edged sword with the wide receivers who fall is instead of being taken by the Bears at 9 or whatever, you end up being selected by the Bills at 27, and then your whole career changes.
Yeah, yeah. I think I would be shocked, though. Like, I don't think that he's... I think that if you're looking at, like, high-variance first-round wide receivers, it's Quentin Johnston over an Addison or a JSN. I think Addison's super solid. I mean, I think Johnston has a super interesting ceiling, but I think that there's a very reasonably scary floor for a player like that too.
I mean, Johnston is the one that probably is the widest variance of, like, depending on who you're talking to, what their opinion of him will be. Right. Like, some people, like, you know, honestly, sort of in the beginning of what analytics for fantasy football looks like, he would have been sort of what we wanted. You know, big dude,
he would have been,
plays on the outside, you know, super fast, super big. And now the NFL, I mean, it's because so much of what NFL offenses are doing, like last year was a 10-year low in average depth of target across the league. That type of guy is losing value. I mean, just think about the guys you're drafting, like Amon-Ra St. Brown, we love. Mike Williams, we like a lot less because there's a lot more high variance there.
So I'll say this about Johnston. His profile, when you only look at first round wide receivers over the last decade or so, his profile really comps well to busts, right? Like I have this in my profile page for him in the prospect guide, but so three other wide receivers since 2011 have been selected in the first round of the draft with a sub 2.5 best season yards per team pass attempt rate and a receptions per game rate below 4.5. Those three wide receivers, so this is since 2011. So guys who had, and by the way, those are similar numbers of what Quentin Johnston had. They're a little bit better, but it's Kelvin Benjamin, Cordarrelle Patterson, and Henry Ruggs. Those are the three wide receivers who fit that mold. And then there are only six wide receivers who've gotten drafted in the first round since 2011 that had a negative stat score, which is just the combination of the production metrics that I use in my model. Those six wide receivers are, again, Kelvin Benjamin, Cordarrelle Patterson, Henry Ruggs. One of them is Jalen Waddle, but that only has to do with the fact that he couldn't stay healthy. And the other two are Kadarius Toney and Philip Dorsett. And Quentin Johnston has a negative stat score in the model. But if you look at some second round wide receivers, you can start to see the upside in some comps. I mean, you can see like the T. Higgins is my main comp for him, my higher end comp. Like he does profile really well to that, but he also
that like, feels right. Like yeah, that, yeah. But yeah, I mean, Laquon Treadwell is like the oh shit, I can't believe we drafted this guy in the first round.
Right. So I think that T. Higgins is like the optimistic way to view Johnston, but I think the more pessimistic view is like a Breshad Perriman or a Alec Pierce, if you will. I mean, Alec Pierce was insanely athletic coming out last year. So I do think there's just a wide range of outcomes here. I would rather play it safer with a guy like JSN or Jordan Addison. But I understand the allure to some degree with Johnston.
I think Addison versus Johnston is going to be very hard for me when I'm on the clock in a lot of these drafts. Cause I assume that, in Superflex, which I think pretty much all of my leagues are at this point, I don't know if I'm in any non-Superflex dynasty leagues. I probably will just take Addison. It feels like a little bit of a betrayal for like everything I stand for because I love these big fast dudes, but I just sort of get the sense that like Addison is not, there's like no failure in his range. Like I think like worst case, he kind of becomes like, a Hunter Renfrow style guy who's going to catch 70 passes a year.
I think Addison is like a better version of, or maybe like a reasonable floor. I'm not saying like a 0 percentile outcome for him, but maybe like a 25th percentile to 40th percentile outcome is like a Jahan Dotson from last year, which you're not going to be like that upset if you have Jahan Dotson on your dynasty roster. And there's still some upside there with Addison.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. So Anthony Richardson is your fourth overall ranked pick right now before the draft in your top 48 rankings in the draft guide, Superflex. Yeah, obviously. So how much of that is based off of the idea of one, probably not going to play very much as a rookie, and two, how much of that would change if Carolina traded all that shit to get him at one?
I think that, so the reason I put him as the QB3 was because it's pre-draft. I mean, it's the same reason. I got a question from my mailbag this week and someone's like, well, why do you have so many wide receivers ranked ahead of running backs if this is a better running back class? And the reason is there's a lot of good running backs, don't get me wrong, but a lot of these running backs, some of them are going to be day 3 picks. Some of them are going to be day 2 picks, and pre-draft, you're better off just going after first round wide receivers if that's how you're drafting right now. So it's going to change post-draft based on where these guys land and how the fit is. But you know, I feel similarly to a guy like Richardson who, you know, I've gotten to the point with, if I'm being honest, I've gotten to the point with quarterback evaluation where I don't really care what people say about these guys, pre-draft, whether you're talking Josh Allen. I know this doesn't seem very analytical, but whether you're talking about Josh Allen, Daniel Jones, even Justin Herbert. People didn't like Justin Herbert coming out.
I didn't like Justin Herbert. I thought Justin Herbert was going to suck.
And there comes a point in time where, you know, it's this combo of obviously these teams are looking at traits, particular traits, but you have to also recognize what the game of fantasy football is and what wins. And absolutely, Anthony Richardson, based on his production profile and the lack of accuracy and all that stuff and the way he actually throws the football, all of that looks horrific. But you also have to recognize that we don't always care about that from a fantasy perspective. It's not unlike how we viewed Justin Fields last season in fantasy, where he was a pretty obvious later round pick. I mean, I have receipts. This is not me just, again, saying in hindsight. Pretty obvious later round pick, given the mobility aspect. He was not a good passer last year. I mean, Jalen Hurts 2 years ago wasn't a great passer. And you hope that there's improvement from a dynasty perspective. But, I mean, as long as Anthony Richardson, like, if he gets 3 years as a starter, or 2 years as a starter even, he's going to dominate in fantasy football during those 2 years.
He's going to crush. Yeah.
And the other aspect to that is there's still a ceiling to that where he's the only guy in this class who's probably going to be able to match from a fantasy perspective in a high range of outcome. He's the only guy in this class is probably going to be able to match the elite guys in fantasy. Again, I'm not saying he's Patrick Mahomes, he's Josh Allen or anything, but I'm saying the way he accumulates points is going to allow him to be able to match those guys. And so if you want to play it safe, of course, go for CJ Stroud, go for Bryce Young. You have a much better outcome in terms of them starting for 10 plus years in the league. I'm not going to deny that, but the upside is absolutely with Richardson because this is the way that the game of fantasy football is played.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably getting like a Derek Carr type median when you take Stroud or Young. Like, they're just going to be around Stroud. I mean, it's sort of interesting. Like, Stroud didn't run at all until the very end. His last two games, he ran a little bit and said, I think he's capable. I mean, he said at the, you know, they're doing their interviews at the scouting combine. He's like, you know, I wish I ran more, whatever. So maybe the market will be a little bit too low on that from Stroud at the beginning. Although I think the fact that him and Fields went to the same school and Fields didn't run very much at Ohio State either, I actually think the market will kind of pick up on that and just actually give him more credit for rushing than he's done. I mean, I'm pretty worried about Bryce Young being having 6 weeks to bulk and getting to 189 pounds at the combine, which probably means he played at 180, 185, something like that, which is, I mean, you know, very concerning, like extremely concerning for a quarterback. Like that is to give people an idea, that is like 30 pounds lighter than what Kyler has played at, who is the other kind of tiny quarterback that people think about.
He still weighed in at over 200 at the combine. Bryce Young was,
but yeah, he was what 203 or whatever, right, is what he right. actually
but he,
was.
But it was clearly he just drank a ton of milk or something before that all went down. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's not a real thing. I mean, my take would be, and I guess this is maybe more of a class where I think the order prospects are going to go in will be a little bit less defined. I think it'll be more based on like what your team actually needs. Like, I could see if I have a good team, I happen to get the 105 because I did some trade, and you know, it's not a best ball league. You're having to set your lineup every single week. I could see taking Jahmyr Gibbs over JSN, over Johnson, over Addison, you know, just because if I needed a running back or whatever, like I could see, I get the sense that JSN and Ad, like these guys could be good. I don't think I'm passing over the next Jamar Chase if I don't take JSN though.
Yeah. I mean, I right now have JSN in a tier above Gibbs. And the main reason I think there's, and we can go on about this for a while too, because I don't think it's talked about enough, because this class in particular, this running back class, there's a lot of guys who have ideal size that are going later. Like Kendre Miller, I think, has ideal size, and you know, you're going to be able to get him in the second round. Abanikanda from Pitt, Izzy. I think he's,
I like him,
unbelievably undervalued. So you have these like bigger bodied guys who are going in the second round, who that's the stereotype, the prototypical size back that does well in fantasy football. And I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, Gibbs weighed in under 200 pounds, so therefore he doesn't hit some threshold. That's not at all how I think about this stuff. But if you look historically at what we've seen over the last 10 plus years out of running backs coming out, guys who are under not just 200 pounds, but even 210 pounds, they do not perform nearly as well in fantasy football as guys who are above that mark. And I'm giving that buffer because obviously Jahmyr Gibbs is significantly below 210 pounds. I mean, he's playing at, I mean, he was under 200 at the combine. Let's say he plays at low 200s. That's not something that we should completely ignore. You know, and that's part of my model. I mean, weight itself is a piece of the model that gets signaled for me. And that's why, you know, if you were to not have that in there, he'd be like a 96th percentile prospect, which anything over the 95th percentile usually has pretty good outcomes. But because of the weight aspect and what he came in, and it's not threshold based, it's just based on the pure weight. He's at like the 93rd. And you look at comps, very, very hard to find reasonable comps for him based on history. I mean, like the best one is probably Gio Bernard. I mean, it's like Bernard, Isaiah Pede, like these guys who just didn't really come through in the second round. And, you know, the other thing that I was looking at actually earlier today, I started messing around with basically my model looks at a player's best two seasons in points per game across his first 3 years in the league. And it averages those numbers out. I call it a B2S score, best two season score. And I looked at, based on draft capital, every player has some sort of expected B2S based on where they're drafted, right? And I was looking at who has outperformed and underperformed based on that expected value. So it's basically an expected output based on draft capital. And if you look at top 100 picks at running back, the only guy who has far exceeded that expectation has been Christian McCaffrey. That's it. Like over the last decade plus, that's been a smaller back. I mean, you have some that were like, okay, but they were not, I mean, like Devin Singletary has been okay, but none of these guys have been truly, truly elite running backs. And that's how I sort of view Gibbs, is that like, he's a very solid player. Like he is going to be good in PPR. I just don't know if he's going to be a consistent RB1 in fantasy football. I think that he can be a very strong high end RB2, maybe mid range RB2. And he's going to be involved in the passing game wherever he goes. But I just don't know. I don't know if the fantasy community is putting enough stock into the weight thing from that perspective. I'm not saying from a threshold perspective. I'm just saying from a ceiling perspective. And then obviously the one guy, Devon Achane, I think is just massively overvalued because of that. Like he's someone who I love as a player. Awesome, awesome player. But from a fantasy perspective, this kind of profile does not work out. It's just very, very hard to back that as like the RB4 in this class.
What does Tony Pollard weigh? Because that's sort of what I'm thinking.
He's bigger
is
than
like,
you think.
What happened last year with Pollard, though, is actually like it's actually a warning sign, though, because I forget the name of the Cowboys running back coach who they ended up firing when Kellen Moore left. But basically he was like, yeah, we don't think Pollard can handle this work. We don't think Pollard can get 25 carries a game, which is why they were playing Malik Davis when Zeke missed those two games or whatever. Right. Like it's a self-selecting thing, I think, not maybe because Devon Achane or Jahmyr Gibbs can't do it, but the coaches don't think they can do it and don't really want to give them 25 touches.
I wrote about that in my prospect guide. It has nothing to do with how I view these guys. It has everything to do with how NFL teams deploy their running backs. That's it. I mean, to be fair though, I do think that there are narratives about players like a Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard was 210 at the combine and where he weighed in. And 210 is a very solid number for a running back. I mean, I still look at BMI as well, and he's, you know, 6 feet tall. So like it changes things a little bit. And fortunately, Jahmyr Gibbs came in shorter than we expected too. So he's a little bit more compact, which is good. But at the same time, like weight gets signal. Like we can't just ignore weight because this guy's really, really good. I mean, we're not picking these guys to be good in the NFL. We're picking these guys to be good in fantasy football. And there is at running back a distinct difference between those things. We saw it with Tony Pollard.
Huge difference. Brian Robinson last year, maybe not that good of a real football player, but he just convinced Ron Rivera to just give him the ball a bunch.
Yeah. I mean, but even like Tony Pollard's a great example because for years he was clearly a very effective running back who wasn't seeing work. And like, we just have to, like at some point you have to like build into that and move into and lean into that because it's a very, very real thing. So I think there is concerns. I mean, I can understand if you want to brush off the Gibbs concerns to some degree, because it's not like he's like super, super small, but Devon Achane is tiny. Like he is not, I mean, it's not Deuce Vaughn tiny, but
I was going to say he's not as tiny as my favorite running back in the class.
I mean, Deuce Vaughn's awesome, but that's the thing too, man, is that like when you look at a player like Achane and you look at a player like Vaughn, right? Of course, Vaughn is smaller. We've never seen anything like that. But if you compare Vaughn to his ADP and where he's going to be drafted at in rookie drafts and in any redraft league versus Achane, there's a massive difference. Like right. Keyshawn Vaughn, Deuce Vaughn is going to be a third round, maybe even fourth round in Superflex drafts rookie pick. Whereas Devon Achane is like a borderline.
Yeah, he's going to be like the 12th or 13th overall pick.
Right. And like, there's a big, big difference there when Vaughn had a better production profile. And if you look at history and how these guys at this size have performed, you could argue that players that are Vaughn size have done better than players that are Achane size, only because we've seen Tariq Cohen and Jaquizz Rodgers at least like be
work done.
Something.
Work done was listed at 180. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, but that's the thing is it takes a lot of looking back in history to get decent comps for these guys. And that's scary. It's just, it makes them way, way more volatile than what the market is saying. And I'm for a guy that size, I'd rather just wait. Right. And not have to spend, I don't mind getting them. Like I'm going to probably draft a lot of Deuce Vaughn this year, but I don't need to spend up to get him, which is the reason why I'd be doing that.
So there's this other interesting wrinkle too, which is that a lot of people really like Charbonnet. A lot of people, but that's sort of the tier break. Charbonnet to me is sort of Tyler Allgeier-esque. Like I think you probably get like some good running back two seasons out of him, but I don't. It just the Kareem thing, like legendary upside. Like I just don't know if we ever get an 18 carry, 5 catch per game season out of him. Which is not to say he's not a good pick at the 2-1 or whatever, but yeah. That's the type of guy I generally skip. Like I think I'd rather take any of the tight ends who are going to get good draft capital over him, like Meyer, Kincaid, whoever, because hitting on those guys is so valuable.
Yeah, I mean my thing with the tight end stuff is mostly that the market is bad at tight end evaluation, and I would rather just lean into the position that matters a little bit more. I mean, I can understand going that route if they're going to get great draft capital, but if Charbonnet gets second round draft capital, let's say, like if he's a mid second round pick, like let's say that he closes the gap between himself and Jahmyr Gibbs by like 15 picks or something like that. Like let's say that Gibbs is an early second rounder and Charbonnet is a mid second rounder. I could easily make the argument that Charbonnet is a better pick than Gibbs because of the size, because of what we've seen historically. Here's another nugget about Charbonnet from my prospect guide. So let's say that he goes in round two, he's listed above 210. He was 214 at the combine, which was actually a little bit lighter than what people thought that he would be. Thought that he might be closer to 220, but since 2011, of the players that are 210 plus with a best season reception share above 12%, when you get this combination of 210 plus players with good receiving numbers, it's usually a very good combination to strive for and to go after. But second round running backs with that are 210 plus pounds, a 12% or better reception share, best season reception share since 2011, Le'Veon Bell, Joe Mixon, Daniel Thomas, and DeAndre Swift. Those are the four. And so
Le'Veon Bell is the, if I'm a Charbonnet guy, it's saying that because Le'Veon was not super fast at the combine, was bigger, not great as a rookie, but lost a little bit of weight, became a great pass blocker and did really well at the short shuttle and the three cone stuff. And obviously like was the best running back in fantasy for like 3 years.
Well, here are the guys who went in the third round with that same criteria. You get to Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara, David Johnson, Charles Sims, DeMarco Murray, Zach Moss, Keyshawn Vaughn, Antonio Gibson, and Rashad White. I mean, that like for third round picks, that's an unbelievable hit rate just with that criteria. So I think there's a lot going for him favorably analytically. I think he's the pretty clear RB3 in this class. I'm actually in the camp, though, that I think that he has a chance to close that gap with Gibbs and legitimately pass him if the draft capital and landing spot situation works out for him. The three comps in my model for Charbonnet, it's kind of hard to find decent comps for like good matches for him, but were right. Sony Michel, Kareem Hunt, and Tevin Coleman. Those were the three for Charbonnet.
I mean, Sony Michel could have been really good probably if he didn't tearing his knees up. So that seems reasonable. I moved Kayshon Boutte all the way down. I'm not taking this dude at all. This is such a nightmare of a prospect profile for me. It's sort of like the inverse of George Pickens. So Pickens was number one overall high school recruit, got injured, whatever, but did really well at the combine and like came back faster than expected from his injury. Like, I was big on Pickens last year and I was hoping Booty would do the same thing. And he did like the opposite, like bad at the combine, tanked all the interviews. There's like weird, if you Google some stuff about him, there's some off, very bizarre off the field stuff going on there. So I just like, I'm out on him. Someone else can take him.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, man, because guys with his breakout age, are incredibly good. Yeah, like the only failure, I'm looking at my guide again, but we've seen just 14 wide receivers who've been selected in the top 100 who had a breakout age of 18 and a half or better. And 10 of those players were early declares like Kayshon Boutte. And of those 10, only Paul Richardson failed to give us a double digit PPR point per game season across his first 3 years in the league. So like the majority of them, and one of those players, 40% of them hit 15 plus PPR points per game, and Drake London's part of that group. He just hasn't gotten there yet, and he probably will. So like strictly breakout age, like only breakout age, he is a fantastic prospect for analytically. But yeah, I mean, like I just don't know where he's going to get drafted. If you look at like NFL mock draft database, which is where I get a lot of my projected draft capital from, he's been slipping in those drafts. He's gone down like 20 or 30 spots since the beginning of the off season. You know, I will say this too, and I do think this is kind of interesting. The top comp in my model for him, I hate to say it out loud, I mean, it's out there obviously though, but it was Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I think the difference though, is that St. Brown is still more agile and more athletic than what Boutte tested as, but ARSB also in a situation where you have this like wide receiver U type environment.
Right.
And he didn't have amazing production, but he had a really good breakout age amongst that environment. And so I think that there is at least like that like glimmer of hope, but his production profile sucks. Boutte's does. And you know, the other guys are Antonio Callaway and Kenny Stills was one as well. But yeah, I mean, like I think what I'm going to do with him is literally just base it off of the fantasy football market, right? Instead of, you know, let's say he gets day two capital. If that happens, then great, we can feel whatever about him. But if the fantasy football market is turned off as you are, right, and everyone is dropping him, I'm still going to throw that dart just because there are at least traits that suggest that he could be good.
And also another thing we've learned, which is great, you would think that this shit would like not matter at all, but teams actually, like Stephon Diggs is a great example. Like, he got drafted basically because he was a five-star high school recruit, you know, like that stuff tends to hang around. And I also think it probably matters that every guy he played with at LSU is an NFL player. Like every dude's like, I think like, for example, if I have like the 210 or whatever, and it's like Hendon Hooker, who's never going to start an NFL game, and Kayshon Boutte, yeah, sure. Like, whatever. I think that's a good dart throw. Okay, so the tight ends, right? This is like famously very hard to do for analytically minded people, because you can just get a comp for anybody at tight end because the product, like the hits are so few. A lot of these guys get drafted with no production. In fact, you could even argue that some of the really productive college tight ends, Austin Seferin Jenkins, Jay Samaro, these guys have actually ended up being the biggest bust because they produced in just like a really barren environment. But this is supposed to be a very good tight end class. Really, that's the meme right now, is that this is one of the best tight end classes in a decade. So what are you making of, I mean, specifically Meyer and Kincaid?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. I tried to build a tight end model this offseason to
and it was probably just like, LOL.
It's impossible. It's seriously, but there's a combination of why it's impossible. It's not only does the production stuff not match the way that it does at wide receiver, but then on top of that, you know, and then athleticism matters a lot more at tight end than it does at wide receiver. But on top of that, there's just not many tight ends that you can really relate back to when you're modeling, right? So when you're building a model, you're trying to figure out you're trying to measure something. You're trying to measure success in some way. And you're essentially doing that by looking at other profiles historically who have found success. And it's really difficult at tight end because there, as we know in fantasy football, every single year it's just the same dudes up top, and then there's just a cluster. And if are you really trying to like match that cluster? I'd argue no. But then it's really then hard to say this guy is Mark Andrews, this guy is Travis Kelce. It's just impossible to do something like that. And so it's the game of fantasy football that makes it really tough too. But you know, to what I was talking about earlier, you know, I don't have many strong takes about tight ends in general. I look at what the market is saying, what they're doing. I look at athleticism measurables. And then I look at draft capital. And the interesting thing with this class, if you look at the top like six guys who are projected to go, you know, in that order, you know, you have Meyer, you have Kincaid, you have Musgrave, Darnell Washington, Sam Laporta, and Tucker Kraft. If you look at those guys, every single one of them had a great height adjusted speed score, every single one of them. And so I'm inclined to say, like, let's look at where the tiers break within the rookie draft ADP, and let's attack those guys where these tiers break, because I think a lot of them could end up being hits. And since we know that there's just a wide range of outcomes at tight end in general in terms of how predictive they are, I'd rather like go after some of the cheaper guys and just see if I can land on one of them, because all those guys at least look good on paper. Darnell Washington doesn't have the production profile that some of the other guys do.
He's just a beast.
It's like Jelani Woods last year. It's like, let's just go for it, man. Sure.
So I've said this before and people mock me. I don't know. Your perspective on this might be interesting. The thing I'm worried about with Washington is that a team drafts him and is like, great, we have Chris Manhertz. We have the greatest sixth offensive tackle in the whole sport. And yeah, he catches 20 passes a year or whatever. But my concern is that whatever team drafts him is basically like, they don't even view him as a move tight end at all. It's just like, yeah, great. He's, I mean, that's what he did at Georgia, right? He played with Brock Bowers, who like, they'll be crazy. Wait till next year's class. Just wait until next year's class with Brock Bowers. So he, you know, they run two tight end stuff, and Washington is like hardly getting any targets because he just is destroying people in the run game.
That's why, like, to me personally, I think like Kincaid is really, really interesting just because of his journey through it all and like the comps that people have thrown out there. Like, he doesn't have the most experience in the world, but it's like, look at what he's already done and what's going to happen as he continues to grow with the position. Cause it's a really difficult position to know and learn. I mean, it's the one position on the football field that literally has to do basically everything. Right. And that's why we don't see.
It's so hard. Yeah.
It's just a super, super tough position. And so, you know, I am intrigued by that. But again, you know, it's just one of those positions where we kind of got to throw darts. This is analytically speaking, of course, kind of got to throw darts. And historically, the market has not been very good at predicting which ones are going to be good.
No. Even NFL teams themselves are not even that good, right? Charlie Kolar goes ahead of Isaiah Likely last year. I mean, famously, Hayden Hurst was a first round pick and Mark Andrews was a third round pick.
That's part of the problem, though, too, is that, like, again, when you're modeling against these guys, there's such a cluster that draft capital does get an insane amount of signal, right? Because there's this cluster of guys, and like the guys who are going early, of course, are doing better than the guys who are going late. But if you're looking for like a true ceiling, like think about all of the best tight ends in Dynasty over the last 15 years. A lot of them were not first round picks. I mean, you have Kelce.
Were any of them? So Kelce.
I mean, Andrews Kelce wasn't. Kelce wasn't. Kittle wasn't. I mean,
Kittle was a fifth. Gronk was a third.
Right.
About some of the guys who were first round picks, some of the biggest busts, right? I mean, Hockenson until like four games last year. Huge bust.
Yeah, but you have like, let's just say first two rounds, right? Like you can still find guys who were like Pat Freiermuth, right? Solid as a rock, kind of tight end asset for your dynasty team. Dallas Goedert, Hockenson, you know, a first round pick, as you noted. Mike Gesicki's been okay enough. I mean, not really someone that David Njoku's been fine. Gerald Everett has had decent enough seasons. Like, you're just getting a lot of that, right? And so like there is correlation as a result, because the amount of players who are drafted in those rounds are doing better than the guys who are being drafted later. But the guys who are being drafted later are also the ones who are becoming the truly elite guys in the game. And there's just so few of them that it's hard to model against that, right?
I think you actually just hit on it there, is that like at any given time, there's like four tight ends in fantasy you really want to own. Right. And how the roads to them getting there are so bizarre so much of the time. Like, yeah. how many people gave up on Travis Kelce in Dynasty after he didn't play as a rookie, after he had microfracture surgery on his knee?
Right, now he's the best fantasy asset. Like, him and Gronk have been the best fantasy assets of tight end ever.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, look, I've been in this camp of, like, I, like, when Fant and Hockenson came in the league, I was like, these guys are unbelievable. Like, Hockenson is unreal. Noah Fant was, like, the heir to Jimmy Graham's throne, and Hockenson, I guess, has been fine, you know, but he's not really recouped what you paid for him a lot of the time.
Right. And I'm not trying to say that this is the direction that's going to go, but look at how things have gone for Kyle Pitts so far.
Oh my God. I'm at the Kyle Pitts drafters in startups for the last 2 years. They're like, I was actually in a startup last year, a tight end premium one, where he went second over it. Mahomes went first in Superflex, and Pitts went second.
Oh my God. Yeah, can't get into that. But yeah, I mean, I draft capital matters across the larger sample, but I don't think draft capital matters nearly as much when you're talking about becoming elite.
No, it really doesn't. Which is to say, I think a good strategy for these leagues is to just, like, a lot of time with your third and fourth round picks. Reeves talks a lot about just, like, taking whatever running backs get drafted in those rounds, because you tend to get a lot of year one production from those guys. You'll just luck into it. Damian Pierce and Isaiah Pacheco are a really great example of that. Like, these dudes just ended up being starting running backs, like, right away in the league. But I think the long-term payoff on tight end is maybe even better.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, I haven't studied the market dynamics of tight end enough, just because it clearly is not as important as running back and wide receiver. But I will say this too. I think that the one of the most common things that you'll just generally read is, like, well, tight ends get off to a slow start, so you can just trade for them after year one. Guys, one's just going to, like, get rid of these tight ends that they draft.
Trade for David Njoku right now and see what happens.
Yeah, like, it's not, it doesn't work that cleanly. I mean, maybe in some leagues it will, but it does not work. I mean, if someone's going to spend second round rookie draft pick on a tight end, they're not just going to give up on them after 1 year. It's just
or even... Even like Kmet, who's basically been useless. Kmet had, like, two good games last year.
Right.
Kmet right now, if you offered the 106 for him in tight end premium, I don't know if that person would accept.
No. Well, I mean, I think that you're saying that they would keep Kmet.
So person has Kmet and you offer them the 106 in this draft. I think they're thinking about it. I don't think they're smashing accept for Cole Kmet in tight end premium.
I think they'd take the 106.
What's the line? The 109?
No, I think it's more, I think you're still, like, in the second with it, because you're still getting, because I would assume that the majority of the tight ends in this class, like the good ones, like three or four of them are going to be ranked ahead of them after
ranked
draft.
Ahead.
Yeah. That's the lot.
I mean, I would be buying Kmet if that's true. If I could get,
like,
if
after
I could,
the show, after the show, you got to put in some offers for Kmet. It sounds like,
well, unfortunately,
we have a truther.
Well, no, the thing was, I mean, this is so far removed from what we're talking about, but Kmet was like a third round rookie pick in a lot of the, cause that remember he went in the third round and it was like the worst tight end class ever. So he was, so I actually have him on a bunch of teams already. And trust me, it's not really been that fun of an experience.
So you're just really trying to drive up his price right now.
No, I wouldn't trade him away. I'm bullish on him because he literally never subs off the field. Like he plays like night. Like it's like absurd how much he plays. And I don't.
Yeah, it would be great if he played. It would be great if he played in a non 1975 offense.
let's talk about the Bears. This has been my thing. Obviously, I think it's a downgrade or neutral for DJ Moore because the Bears throw the ball so less often. But I do think you now have to give some credence to the idea that Fields is at least entering into a stage where it's actually possible for him to take the next step as a passer, going from Equanimeous St. Brown and Dante Pettis and these guys to, like, a they at least have the personnel to run a real NFL offense if they wanted to.
Yeah, but the problem is that the way people talk about it is it's either Justin Fields is trash or this is the new Philadelphia Eagles.
Or he's Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, and it's really frustrating because I don't think people realize, I talk about this in my mailbag that drops on Friday, but you know, the big thing with the Eagles, year over year, the Eagles didn't get that much more pass heavy. They threw the ball like, I think like 40, a little over 40 more times across the entire season. They had two and a half more pass attempts per game.
There's in way order, more efficient.
Yeah. In order. Exactly. They became way, way more efficient. And I think that we're going to see higher efficiency from Fields, obviously, but in order for Chicago to get to where Philadelphia was last year on a pass attempt stand from a pass attempt standpoint, Philadelphia still had a run heavy team because they were leading and all that kind of stuff. But if you were to look at history since 2011, there's only been three teams that have increased their pass attempts per game by 10 or more, and none of them increased by 11 or more. That's basically what the Bears would need to do to get to just get to Philadelphia's passing volume last season, which was not even that high. And then on top of that, you're asking Justin Fields with a worse supporting cast than what Jalen Hurts had last year. You know, when you're talking offensive line, the weapons, all of that, you're then asking Justin Fields to be just as good as Jalen Hurts through the air. That just doesn't seem reasonable. And I know that he can get by, he can get by in rushing and all that kind of stuff. I'm also speaking about like the pass catchers here. Like I just don't see how, you know, this is like DJ Moore from a projection standpoint, his ceiling, like a reasonable projected ceiling from a target standpoint, is like 125 for DJ Moore next year. And like then you're talking about the secondary pieces there, and the secondary pieces, like, now the thing about Kmet that's a little bit scary is now you're going to have a better threat in the slot, because they could either move Claypool or Mooney into the slot. You know, Claypool played a lot of slot in Pittsburgh, and he's not a very good perimeter wide receiver. And so there's going to be a bigger threat for Kmet in the slot too. I just think it's going to be a mess for fantasy outside of Fields, because Fields is going to get by on his rushing.
Well, yeah. And I mean, so right, I guess we're speaking on Thursday, March 16th at 2:51 Central Time, and right now Khalil Herbert is their starting running back. I mean, everyone knows what's hanging out there though. Ezekiel Elliott, 1 year, up to $8.5 million.
You think it's coming?
It just feels like a classic Bears, like two steps forward, eight steps back type move. Like, we did this really smart trade, we got the first pick, we're gonna try and rehab Claypool, we got a veteran to spend some money on a DJ Moore. You know what? Let's do. Let's bring in Ezekiel Elliott.
My thing with that, and the reason, if you want to look at it from the opposite perspective, because I don't disagree that could happen. But if you want to look at it from the opposite perspective to give you some optimism about Khalil Herbert, they signed Travis Homer, right? They gave him a deal because he's a good special teams guy, all that kind of stuff. And then they have Trestan Ebner, right? And if they do go after a veteran running back, that means they're either going to hold four on a game day, which doesn't happen very often, or they're not going to want Ebner around, which I don't know if that's going to happen. So there's a chance, knowing that they're not in this mode right now where they're going to dominate the NFL and they need that running back as like the cherry on top. I don't know. I mean, there's still a chance that Khalil Herbert is the early down back and they use Ebner as and Homer sort of in this like third down role. That's the optimistic side. I could easily see what you're saying happening too.
It just feels like that's going to happen. I mean, I hope it doesn't. I actually thought the funniest thing would be the Buccaneers signing Ezekiel Elliott to go with whatever this zombie mishmash of a team they have is.
And yeah, Zeke, I don't know what they're doing right now.
Well, it'll make a lot more sense once Chris Godwin gets traded to a good team for a second round pick. That'll change the whole dynamics of it.
I hope it happens, man.
Or maybe Baker, you know, Baker wins a shitty division, because no teams in that division are very good.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's still a lot of veteran backs. My general, and I've been talking about this on my Discord a lot over the last week, but like my general vibe is that if you're seeing a situation where a veteran running back is now being looked at favorably by the market who just signed with a new team, sell them. Like Miles Sanders, I'm selling them if I have them. You know, if you have David Montgomery, you can maybe make the argument too, but like the, just generally speaking, blanket statement, I would be selling veteran running backs who are going to these teams, because a lot of those teams still lack running back depth, which means they're going to add someone in the draft. And there's enough big bodies in this draft that can just ruin some of those players.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, I mean, and there are pass catching guys in the draft too. So if your veteran running back got signed to be the ground and pound dude, and you're wish casting a three down role, like all of a sudden Chris Evans or something is coming in, and you know, it's all over.
Yeah.
Who do you want to take? We're like an hour into a podcast about rookies and we haven't mentioned the top rookie. Who do you want to take, Bijan?
I don't know if I care that much, because because part of me wants him to go to a bad team and get people to like not view him as this like Zeus like player within the fantasy football landscape, because he's such a good prospect. And I would almost rather it be a situation where the landing spot is iffy and people just overstate that. And then he just dominates. He's going to dominate wherever he goes. I mean, I don't know. Do you I don't know where it's going to be at this point, just given what teams have already been doing. But it's another example of what I was just talking about, where these teams, they're adding players, but there's such depth at running back in this draft that these running backs can come in and just torpedo those guys. I think I think Miami is a great spot for any running back. Yeah. They did just sign their two veterans back, but you know,
it's Jeff Wilson and Raheem Mostert.
If you're getting like a Charbonnet or something, that I don't think they go that route, because Mike McDaniel is from the Shanahan tree, and maybe they spend like a third rounder on some guy that we didn't like entering the draft, and all of a sudden we like him exiting the draft. But I don't think they go that route, but I do think that's probably one of the more attractive spots to go. Obviously Philadelphia is a decent spot. But I do worry about the pass catching potential there. There's definitely a correlation between mobile quarterbacks and not checking down as much. And that's somewhat of an issue. But those are the two teams that seemingly would have the biggest voids.
What about the Los Angeles Chargers, who just decided they didn't want to pay Austin Eckler?
Yeah, I mean, like, if he goes to the Chargers and it's game over, that's a scenario again where like I don't want that to happen, almost, because I don't want the market to increase the price for him even more. Yeah.
So I would say the Chargers are one supercharged scenario. I think you could argue if Arizona does a trade back, if some team decides they really want Anthony Richardson or Levis or whoever, and they get to like 15, it doesn't make any sense for them. Yeah. I mean, but it does kind of make sense to them. Like, okay, we got Kyler. Let's get Bijan in here. Those are the two that I think would be good spots.
The other team that I should have mentioned is Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati,
if Cincinnati does it, they are such dipshits. You're trying to beat Patrick Mahomes. Like, do not do it. I mean, do it, because it would be amazing for fantasy. It'd be so dumb of them.
I'm just saying, like, you have a scenario where there's stuff going on with Joe Mixon and he might not be there next year, depending on what they do. And if they think that they're one piece away, and they're obviously built well and they have a solid team. So if they're that one piece, that's the kind of team that typically goes after these elite running backs.
Yeah.
Aside from Pete Carroll and, you know, that whole thing.
That is true. That you actually do make a good point, which is that these teams that have not won or are close to winning kind of convince themselves that's the piece they need. Yeah. I think the Bills maybe have learned their lesson after getting
Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is another one.
Man, that pick. Do people realize that Clyde is like going to be the McKinnon to start the year? Cause I don't think McKinnon is going to get retained.
Stop trying to make him a thing.
I have no choice. Talking about Komet bags. I mean, the Clyde Edwards-Helaire bags, they are so far underwater. I can't even dive to get them anymore. I'd get the spins coming back up. But yeah, I mean, the Chiefs are probably the most interesting team, because they were, it's so fun. I mean, Mahomes won the MVP, led the league in touchdowns, and they had three usable players for fantasy: McKinnon, yeah, Mahomes, and Kelsey.
That's what Tom Brady for years, right? It was just literally Gronk, and no one. I mean, we'd get these random running backs,
random spikes. Yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, same deal.
I mean, what Tony? I guess theoretically, you can sell yourself. This will be the last year people will sell themselves on Tony. Like, if he plays like 400 snaps this year, whatever, it'll be done. What would you trade for Tony right now? Wait, if you were trying to acquire, what do you think is?
You don't need to spend anything. You shouldn't spend anything more than a third to get a guy like Tony.
Yeah, no one's giving you. If they already have Tony, no way they're sending you. No way they're letting him go for that.
I have Tony in spots. I would probably be I would be okay with sending like a second or getting a second for him. But when you get to the third, I'm just like, no.
No, I'm really gonna send some trades. If I can send like the 205 for Tony in some leagues, I'm gonna do it.
I would take the second. I'm taking a second for Tony.
What if he's Tyreek Hill? What if it just took a little bit?
I mean, I could sound like a moron in a year, but I highly doubt that's going to happen.
No, I mean, like the smartest Juju Smith-Schuster people were the people who just sold him immediately when he signed with the Chiefs.
Right.
Yeah. What a weird, the Patriots, by the way, this is the contract that makes the least sense. We can end on this. What the fuck is James Robinson doing as a member of the Patriots when he couldn't even get on the field for the Jets last year?
I didn't see. Did they publish his guaranteed money? I only saw the overall deal. I would assume it's like super incentive.
It's gotta be super incentive.
I would hope because definitely it's strange.
$2.2 million of it are guaranteed. So the rest of it is all incentives.
I mean, it's still like Rashad Penny had less guaranteed money than that, which seems kind of wild to me because he's a wildly better player than James Robinson is. I mean, like, never forget last year when James Robinson was dope in fantasy for the first 3 weeks and there was just victory laps everywhere, but he had like the worst success rate in football. Like, he was playing like he was not doing well, and it's clearly all injury related based on that Achilles. But like, yeah, I mean, the Patriots do wild things, but at least this year, they're not like, they weren't like overly aggressive in free agency. Like, they got Juju for less guaranteed than Jacoby got and stuff. And like, you know, it was a fair enough market value deal. But yeah, I mean, I'm prepared for them to ruin a wide receiver or just go after someone who no one wants in fantasy anyway, and just let them just sit and burn.
They need a tight end too. I mean, they love their two tight end stuff. There's a tight end out there. Dalton Schultz to them, just absolutely ruining. I mean, the Chargers are going to sign Dalton Schultz. All right, JJ, tell the people why they should buy the prospect guide and what they get with, because you get three versions of it, right?
Well, yeah, you'll get two. You'll get the, and if there's any edits, you'll get more. But I have the pre-draft version right now that you can buy and you can get and you can read. And then literally the weekend of the draft, I am working all weekend to get it out by Monday because I know people have rookie drafts that start right away. So you'll get the post-draft stuff. But I think people should get it and they'll dig it because it's all analytical. It's all numbers-based. It's all logic-based. You know, I don't have this like black and white way of thinking about this stuff. It's very probability driven. And it also, like, I share my results. Like, the model has results. That's the great part about modeling, is that you can actually see how well certain players did, and you know, certain scores did within the model. And you can see, like, I publish all of that in the guide. It's 135 pages long. You also get the year two model, which is a look at how sophomore players in the NFL are going to be doing this year. So Isaiah Pacheco, if you should buy or sell him, or Kenneth Walker. And
I just, you know, traded for Isaiah Pacheco in a league. I don't know if I feel good about it.
Well, so he's a guy in like the year in any sort of model that's not going to look very good just because he came out and didn't look great. I mean, I was a huge Isaiah Pacheco stan, as a lot of people know, like, you know, last season. I have him in a ton of leagues as a result, but, you know, I'm not selling him automatically. One of his close comps from year one to year two is Chris Carson, which I think makes a lot of sense. Like, that kind of
that just I see it.
A high end RB2 seasons in his range of outcomes potentially. But, you know, obviously there's still downside to a guy like Pacheco and his profile, but like I give takes within that guide. I talk about the wide receiver class from last year and, you know, where those guys rank historically. Hint, hint, Chris Olave, Drake London, and Garrett Wilson are incredibly good assets to have in your dynasty roster. So yeah, you get all that in the guide. It's a lot of words and pages, and I think that you'll dig it.
Yep, I'm with that. All right, everyone, buy the guide. I will put a link to it in the description of this podcast, and I will be back tomorrow for ADP Chasing with Pat Corain and Hayden Wink. See you then.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.